Reds Insiders 102.5 The Game. Adam Vingan joined this week by my co-host on D-Maze, Vingan and Donick, the one and only Willie Donick. It is the season premiere of Preds Insiders. We will bring you Preds Insiders every week throughout the hockey season. Today was the first day of training camp in the sense that this was the first day that the Predators were on the ice. Training camp officially started yesterday with meetings and testing and all of that stuff. But today was the first day that the 2025-2026 Nashville Predators were on the ice. And Willie, we've been wanting and waiting to talk hockey, and now we have a full hour to do it. I'm glad that you are here with me for the season debut of Preds Insiders.
I'm excited to have some live stuff and a forum for some of the Predator followers who are excited to see what happens. How do they respond after a rough year last year where everything that could go wrong went wrong? And so I love talking hockey always, but especially when we're live and we have a chance to maybe get some questions and issues that are on the minds of the fans.
Absolutely. So I had the opportunity to go out to practice today for a couple of hours at Ford Ice Center Bellevue. By the way, all Predators training camp practices will be held at Ford Ice Center Bellevue. So if you want the opportunity to watch the Predators practice for the next couple of weeks, head on out to Ford Ice Center Bellevue. And we will get into some of the things that I saw, but I thought we should start by resetting the offseason. It was a long offseason for the Nashville Predators because last season was undoubtedly the most disappointing season in Predators franchise history. By points percentage, it was the worst season in franchise history since the inaugural season in 1998-1999. The Predators went 30-44-8. They got off to a disastrous start, 0-5, all losses in regulation right out of the gate, and the Predators never recovered. So this offseason, they made some changes. The first change they made, the most notable change they made, I would say, is the drafting of center Brady Martin with the number 5 overall pick in the NHL draft. The NHL draft lottery did not go the Predators' way. They fell to 5th overall, but they still drafted center Brady Martin, and we will discuss Brady Martin later in the program. The Predators made a couple of trades. They reacquired Eric Halla from the New Jersey Devils for a 2025 fourth-round draft pick and defenseman Jeremy Hansel, but mostly focus on the 2025 fourth-round draft pick. They also acquired Nick Hague, a defenseman from the Vegas Golden Knights, and a 2027 conditional third-round pick for Colton Sissons and Jeremy Lauzon. And it's still sort of hard to believe, Willie, that Colton Sissons is no longer a member of the Nashville Predators organization. He spent parts of 11 seasons and played nearly 700 games for the Nashville Predators. But Colton Sissons is gone. In comes Nick Hague, who is a gargantuan individual, 6'6", 245 pounds. In addition, in free agency, the Predators were quiet. Their marquee signing, if you could call it that, was Nick Perbix, formerly of the Tampa Bay Lightning. They signed him to a 2-year, $5.5 million deal. So that's a $2.75 million cap hit. Also, Nick Hague, in addition to being acquired, signed a 4-year, $22 million contract, which is a $5.5 million cap hit, a cap hit that I had a huge problem with at the time. But they bring back Eric Halla. They draft Brady Martin. They trade for Nick Hague. They sign Nick Perbix. When you look at the offseason, Willie, what did you think of the Predators' game plan as they try to rebound from such a terrible season?
I think the game plan, first and foremost, was to get bigger, to defend better. And I think it symbolizes that they would like to reshape how they play. And one of the big things that was discussed, probably as much as anything, while they struggled last year, was all of the influx of the new guys that, to a person, disappointed, and even the people that came back after the really good year they had 2 years ago, who also disappointed, was the mix of that group trying to play the way that Andrew Burnett really would like to play, sort of the outside-the-box, innovative game that was so successful first when he was the interim coach at Florida and then when he was an assistant coach for New Jersey. That's how he wanted to play, and it worked really well 2 years ago. The mix last year just was not right with the personnel. And so that debate throughout the year, while he was taking a lot of heat, was, does a good coach have to adjust to the personnel he's given? I think the direction they're going in this year clearly points to he is going to have to coach to a different type of personnel, and they are going to go about it differently than they did the last 2 years. They're not going to try to squeeze his system into the personnel that probably doesn't fit. It's a little, it's still an older team for the most part, with young guys on the verge of maybe coming up and giving them some young legs. So I think that's the challenge ahead. Get up, get bigger, defend better, and play differently.
The headline out of the first day of Predators training camp, well, there were a couple. Roman Josi addressed reporters for the first time since we learned of his POTS diagnosis, in case you missed it over the summer. Josi was diagnosed with postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome.
Golly, POTS. I'm so impressed. I was on a radio show in Calgary this morning, too, and the host there also sounded out all four of those words. I don't think I am going to ever attempt that. I'm just going to say POTS, if that's okay.
Fair enough.
But great job by you.
Thank you. POTS, or postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome.
Two. I'm so impressed.
He's going for dose.
Is a condition, this according to the Cleveland Clinic, a condition that causes a number of symptoms when you transition from lying down to standing up, such as a fast heart rate, dizziness, and fatigue. While there's no cure, several treatments and lifestyle changes can help manage the symptoms of POTS. And Roman Josi addressed reporters. I asked him a few questions as well. We'll hear from Barry Trotz on Roman Josi in just a matter of moments. But he said he feels 100%. He feels that now that he has an understanding of what's going on in his body, he can better manage it. He can change his preparation, his diet, his sleep habits in order to be the best version of himself. So we will get to that. One texter on our text line says, Josi was smoking pot. Didn't know he was that cool. No, POTS. POTS texter with an S. But I see what you did there. We will get to Josi and the defense, which Willie mentioned in the next segment. The other headline is that Luke Evangelista, still unsigned, a restricted free agent, was not on the ice at Predators training camp, nor will he be until he signs a new contract. Barry Trotz said today that he and Evangelista's representatives are continuing to negotiate. But Trotz also said that it was never a thought during this process to trade Luke Evangelista. He said, quote, we love Luke, end quote, among other things. So Luke Evangelista not on the ice for Predators training camp, and he won't be until he and the Predators can come to terms on a new contract. What I found to be interesting, Willie, and I saw this from Alex Daugherty of the Tennessean, because this happened after I had to leave Fordyce Center Bellevue, is that one of the potential line combinations at practice today was Steven Stamkos, Fedor Svechkov, and Joachim Kemmel, with the assumption that if Evangelista were signed in that training camp, he would be on that line with Stamkos and Svechkov. But in the meantime, Stamkos, Svechkov, Kemmel.
Well, I think there's two things to look at with those combinations. And remember, the first day of training camp, just like in football, everybody wants to hyper-analyze the groups and ask, what do they mean? And it may mean something, and it may be completely different when the season starts. I think as much as you brainstorm throughout the offseason, it's still a little bit of experimentation. But I think one thing you can read into is that I think they would like to take a look at spreading out the veteran guys that they brought in, the 30-somethings like Marchessault, Stamkos, Ryan O'Reilly, Philip Forsberg's now in his 30s, not bunching them all together, but you would like to maybe spread them out among the top nine and infuse some other pieces there. I think ideally that might be what they think is the best way to attack 5-on-5, which was a big problem. But now let's get to Evangelista, because that is a huge part of this. So Evangelista is a restricted free agent. He really has no leverage at all. He can't be picked up by another team at this point. He's trying to get the best deal he can get. And I think the message, and this would take one phone call. Elliot Friedman says this all the way. Even if the whole summer has been a push and pull, one phone call could have him at practice tomorrow. But I think the longer it goes, in my viewpoint, and I'm like a lot of people, I love covering Luke Evangelista. He's charismatic. He's fun to talk hockey with. He's got some flair as a player. He's fun to watch play. But at the same time, I don't think he is completely irreplaceable, right? They have a lot of other guys that they could, at least in the short term, fill his spot with, like a young, exciting prospect in Joachim Kemmel, who they hope will blossom. He's a little younger than Evangelista, but he was a first-round pick that has flashed some really good tools. He had some really good plays in that rookie tournament, so he's got a little bit of confidence. So just in the short term, could they deal without Evangelista? Yeah, and Evangelista in turn would fall behind by holding out. So I don't know how far apart they are. I don't know if he's getting completely lowballed. I have no idea the guts of the negotiation. But I think the leverage is on the Predators' side here. Do you agree?
I would agree. Coming up next on Preds Insiders, can the Predators find the defensive stability that eluded them last season? We will discuss that coming up next. We also want to hear from you, Preds fans. 615-737-1025. Any and all Predators questions, we would be happy to answer them for you. This is the season premiere of Preds Insiders on 102.5 The Game.
Well, I think obviously with Roman, it's Roman's one of the top defensemen in the National Hockey League. He is, I think, the situation that he was in last year, he just wasn't right. All through last spring, through the summer, he's gotten, you've seen all the experts, has done all the things that he needs to do. He feels great right now. If you talk to him, it's not an issue at all. And, going forward. So, having a healthy, focused Roman Josi is a huge boost to our team and our franchise. He's one of the top defensemen in the National Hockey League. So when you don't have that, it does hurt you. And having him back and refreshed and confident in his understanding of his whole situation, that he's in a great place right now.
That was Predators GM Barry Trotz earlier today on the first day of training camp, at least the on-ice portion. By the way, Barry Trotz will conduct his weekly interviews during the season, as he has for the past few seasons. He will do them with us on DVD. Time TBD. I still think it's going to be on Tuesdays around 5 o'clock. But Barry Trotz will join Willie, myself, and Derek Mason for his weekly interviews once the Predators season starts. Drew in Columbia on our text line says, while Andrew Brunette has been retained, are the Predators bringing back the same assistants? I especially wonder about goaltending and the power play. There was one change on the coaching staff. Todd Richards is out. Luke Richardson is in. Luke Richardson was hired as an assistant coach. He is a former head coach in the NHL for the Chicago Blackhawks, and he has extensive NHL experience. Played, 1,400 games, Willie?
A lot of games.
Right. And you look at him, and he looks like a defenseman of that era, a hard-nosed, take-no-prisoners type of defenseman. So I think that addition intrigues me when considering the Predators brought in Nick Perbix, they bring in Nick Hague. They're both big. I mentioned Haig, 6'6", nearly 250 pounds. Perbix isn't that hefty, but he is 6'4". So the additions of Perbix and Haig plus Luke Richardson on the bench leads us to our question: can the Predators find the defensive stability that eluded them last season? The Predators used 15 defensemen last season, which I believe is a franchise record for most defensemen in a season.
If it wasn't the record, the only one that was more was the year of COVID, where you know, one failed COVID test, which I think a lot of people can relate to. They probably had one in there, meant that you had to sit out. So they used a ton of people in that year, but you get the point, right? 15 is way too many to use. And you mentioned the size, and this is where Richardson is coming in, and this is where Andrew Brunette went in to the offseason knowing that things have got to change. They've got to defend better. So he brought in Luke Richardson, a defenseman, who I think is going to really emphasize attention to detail. How do you defend better when you have to defend? Andrew Brunette's philosophy overall is the best way to defend is to not have to defend, to have the puck in the other end, which they did a really good job of last year, as we'll get to. They actually had the puck a lot, but it's when they had to defend, they did not defend very well. So they added two bigger defensemen, Haig and Perbix. So a guy like Andreas Englund, who was one of the bigger defensemen last year, is now probably in the second. He's gone way down in the size rankings, because Justin Barron, for example, he's a pretty big size. He's bigger than the guy they traded for him and Alex Carrier, quite a bit bigger. He's not as experienced. So where does he go in this coming year? That's a key question. But the overall theme, you can see it clear as day. Luke Richardson is coming in to try to fix the defensive coverage, and they have gone with size, shot blocking as an emphasis where it was not an emphasis before.
Let's go to Bob in Antioch on our phone line. Bob, thank you so much for calling. Please go ahead.
Good evening. Thank you for having this this show. This is sort of related to the defense. How do you feel about their backup goaltending situation, and how many games do you think how many games would you like to see for their backup goalie to play?
Thanks, Bob. We are going to talk goaltending in the next segment, so we will answer that question coming up in the next segment.
Well, let's tie it into
what
we just brought up with the defense, right? And the texter's question, Saros was mentioned in there. There's no question. We're going to talk about Saros and Eustace Onanen, because the breakup of the two, how do you go about it? How many games for Saros? How many games for Onanen? They believe that Onanen still has a lot of room for growth at his age and his development. He's still a relatively young goalie that they believe they can shore up some details and he will be better. They're very excited about him. And they believe that UC Saros can rebound and be one of the best goalies in the league, which he has been for most of his time with the starter. It has not been the case the last couple of years. With this caveat, they believe that if you defend and you make things more predictable around him, that he will do what he's capable of doing. They feel like they have not given him a good environment in which to thrive the last couple of years. And it's very easy from the outside to say, well, it's all on the goalie. Show me the goals against and show me the save percentage, and it's all on the goalie. When the reality is, I believe, that it's a lot more what kind of environment defensively are you creating in front of him. And that's what they're hoping to fix.
The Predators' poor defensive play was an underreported storyline last season, because so much of the focus, and understandably, was on the fact that the Predators could not score goals after adding Steven Stamkos and Jonathan Marchessault.
Yes.
So, I get it. When you add 240 goal scorers, you expect to score more goals. They couldn't do that. What's interesting is, on the offensive end of the ice, and even Philip Forsberg brought this up today, which I appreciated. If you look under the surface, the Predators did a really good job of generating offensive zone possession time. But their issue was that they did not translate that possession time into high danger scoring chances. They did not get to the middle of the ice on a consistent basis. On the defensive end, they were significantly worse, I would say, in terms of defending the home plate area, the slot area of the ice, than they were the year before. But because most of us were focused on why can't this team that brought in all of these goal scorers not score goals, the fact that they also really struggled to defend was overlooked.
Right, and it became all on UC Saros. As to, well, what's wrong with Saros, right? And you skipped the part of what about the how they're defending in front of Saros. So let's back up what you said and Forsberg referenced today with the SportLogic stats. And I'm going to go with rankings. Let's not confuse too many people with numbers. But offensive zone time at 5-on-5, which was the weakest part of their game, they had the fourth most time in the other team's zone, the Predators' offensive zone. And, you know, that's where you score.
In terms of the amount of time, literal time, that the Predators had the puck on their sticks in the offensive zone,
they had the fourth best in the league. Edmonton was number one. Pretty good team.
Yes.
Predators were fourth. The Predators also were dead last in goals for 5-on-5. So you're in the offensive zone. You got the puck. But it's not translating to goals. In fact, it was the worst in the league. That was very mystifying. And so this is what Philip Forsberg, I'm sure, and everybody involved is like, how was there some bad luck involved? Probably.
There was.
And probably some things that they've got to tweak in order to cash in on what they need to do. Getting in front of the goalie is step one. That's a good thing. It helps you not have to defend either, but you've got to convert.
And as we both said earlier in the show, the Predators emphasized size on the back end. Here are the heights and weights of their projected top six defensemen. Justin Barron, 6'2", 198 pounds. Nick Hague, 6'6", 245 pounds. Roman Josi, 6'1", 201 pounds. Brady Shea is 6'3", 210 pounds. Nick Perbix is 6'4", 206 pounds. Adam Willsby is 6'1", 188 pounds. That's a pretty hefty defensive core.
Right. And then there's some other guys in the mix. Nick Blankenberg, I think, will be in contention for one of those spots, too. He's a little smaller, but he's now the outlier. You don't have, for example, Mark Delgazzo in the mix right now. You know, not that there's anything wrong with having a smaller guy. Like Tanner Molendijk, I think they hope will contend eventually. He got injured and missed the rookie tournament, so he might be behind by the time he gets going. They love the first-round pick. I forget the name of the kid that they just drafted. The second of the three first-round picks. They think he's looking very, very good early on.
Cameron Reed,
yes. They think his future is bright. There's some other defenders that they have that are probably down the road. But in the meantime, if you look at who's going to play, size does jump out at you. And it shows you that they want a shot block. They want to condense the space. And they want to give UC Saros a better chance to operate.
Coming up next on Preds Insiders, we will discuss UC Saros because I would argue, Willie, that UC Saros is the most polarizing player on the Nashville Predators roster. So we will discuss UC Saros coming up next. Adam Vingan, Willie Donick, the season premiere of Preds Insiders on 102.5 The Game. Preds Insiders, 102.5 The Game. Adam Vingan joined this week by my friend Willie Donick as we celebrate the opening of training camp throughout the NHL. My timeline is filled with quotes from GMs and players and line combinations. I love this time of year. So glad to have the Predators and the rest of the NHL back on the ice for training camp. Now comes the portion of the program when we discuss, as I said before the break, the most polarizing player on the Nashville Predators, that being UC Saros. There was a time last summer, there was a civil war at this station about whether the Predators should re-sign UC Saros or trade UC Saros. Willie and Derek were on Team Sign Saros. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexroad, Caroline Fenton, myself, we were on Team Trade Saros. Though my argument was less about Saros' performance and more about the contractual timelines with Saros and Yaroslav Askarov, but I digress. There is no arguing that UC Saros has seen his performance decline at a steady rate over the past couple of years. And there are multiple reasons for that.
2 years specifically. Before that, he had four outstanding years. Would you agree?
Yes.
Four top six Vezina finishes. So 4 years, and then 2 years that were not at that level.
His peak season was the 2020-2021 season. That was the COVID-shortened season, if I recall correctly. He basically carried the team into the playoffs. He had a 2.28 goals against average and 927 save percentage in 35 starts and 36 games. Since that season, his goals against average has steadily increased from 2.28 to 2.64 to 2.69 to 2.86 to 2.98 last season.
But I would argue that the 2 years after the one you referenced, the shortened season, the COVID season, were as good. I thought he carried them into the playoffs the following year, 21-22. And then the weird year where John Hines was let go at the end of the season. He had a great case for the Vezina that year as far as elevating a team that wasn't very good. So I would say those were three ace Vezina caliber straight seasons right there. 2021, and then the last 2 years have definitely not been quite that level. Although he finished, I think, sixth the year that the Predators made the playoffs in the first year under Andrew Brunette. It wasn't his best, but he had a great second half of the season.
He finished fifth in Vezina Trophy voting in 2023-24.
Right, and that was an off year for him, but still fifth overall in the league. So an off year finishing fifth. And it was really, if you divide it in halves, he had a poor first half and then a more UC Saros-like second half. Last year was a disaster for him and for the entire team.
The issue for UC Saros last season was that he had his worst season of his career right before his 8-year contract kicked in, which starts this season.
Mm-hmm.
Last season, he was playing on the final year of his previous contract. So this is year one of the 8-year contract. So a lot of Predators fans are concerned that this is the start of UC Saros' decline, just as he's starting an 8-year contract. Now, it is not as simple as just looking at the goals against average and the save percentage. There are a ton of factors that play into the struggles that UC Saros has had. We mentioned some in the previous segment. The team could not defend. The Predators were a bottom third team last season in defending. Even the best goalies would have a difficult time playing well when they are constantly under siege, which UC Saros was for much of last season. The other aspect of it as well is that UC Saros received zero, not literally zero, zero goal support. The Predators, as we also acknowledged, could not score, which means that UC Saros had zero margin for error. If he did not play at the top of his game, the Predators were going to lose because they couldn't score the goals.
I don't remember the exact number.
I can find it.
But there were I think, 12 games last year, conservatively, I think 12, where he gave up between 0 and 2 goals in regulation and did not win. In other words, he gave up the goal in overtime, the third goal in overtime, or they lost in a shootout, et cetera, right? So a lot of his best work was not rewarded by wins. So his one-loss record suffered greatly. And that's not to say that he had a great year. It was his worst year statistically by far since he's become the starter, and worst year overall even when he was the backup. So don't get me wrong, but it didn't help that he had such little margin for error. And we had a great conversation last year with Kevin Woodley, the goalie guru, who was, I thought, very articulate in talking about when you are in a tough environment, A, your team can't score, B, your team can't defend, how much pressure is on you every night to not make any mistakes, and then once things go bad, you can kind of unravel. And I think that's what happened to UC Soros, to be fair. And UC Soros is human. And I think the reset button is going to be key here, and also a fresh start in how they defend in front of him.
Just to give you some context, UC Soros received an average of 2.45 in goal support last season. So the Predators were scoring less than 2.5 goals per game during his starts, which means that if he gave up three,
probably going to lose.
Correct. By comparison, Logan Thompson, who had a great season for the Washington Capitals, received 3.93 goals in support on average. So nearly four goals a game. So Logan Thompson could have a rough game, but the Capitals would score enough goals that it would cover up the fact that Logan Thompson had a rough game. Again, UC Soros had no margin for error. But we can't ignore the fact that Soros' numbers have dipped over consecutive years. And this is a huge season for Soros in terms of restoring the confidence of the fan base. Because the Predators fans, you have been spoiled rotten. Because there has rarely been a lull in goaltending in this franchise's history.
I would argue never.
You could argue never.
They've never had what you would consider poor goaltending.
You could argue never. Here's the thing, too, that I found interesting. You mentioned Sport Logic. In addition to my duties here at 102.5 The Game, I also work for Sport Logic, which is a data analysis company that services nearly all 32 NHL teams. So there is a stat that we track at Sport Logic called goalie steals. Sounds pretty straightforward.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, what it is this. A goalie records a steal if the number of goals he saves above expected in a start is larger than the margin of victory. So if UC Soros saves three goals above expected and the Predators win 3-2, that's a steal.
He stole the game.
Over the last three seasons, which is how long we've been tracking steals, UC Soros has more steals than any goalie in the NHL. Last season, he had 8, which was tied for third. Think about how bad last season was for the Predators. UC Soros, you could say it plainly, helped the Predators win 8 games they shouldn't have.
Mm-hmm. Well, it shows you he's very capable of stealing games, obviously, by that stat. And yet, it doesn't tell the full picture, because there were plenty of games where he probably evaluated himself and said, I didn't play well enough for my team. He's held to a high standard, which brings us to the contract. And this is the biggest point I want to make out of this, because this is really the crux of what we've argued. You and I have argued a lot. People on our station have argued a lot. Here is, to me, the biggest misconception out there. That his new contract, which kicks in this year for $7.74 million for the next 8 years, is, quote, an albatross, or he's overpaid. To me, anybody who says that is wrong, absolutely wrong, for these reasons. A, any player at any position who signs an 8-year deal, the last 3 years of that deal are going to be a guessing game as to whether you're going to get anything out of it, okay? And I don't care who we're talking about. So am I here to tell you that in 2029 or 2030, when UC Soros is 36, 37 years old, he's going to be the same goalie he is today? No. Obviously, that's the price of signing a guy long term, is dealing with the last couple of years when you're in your high 30s. So let's look at that separately. But at $7.74 million, he ranks, I believe, currently ninth. He is the ninth highest paid goalie in the league. Look at what has happened to the goalie market and the players who have been signed to contracts who have not done anything close to what he's done. They haven't even played in a playoff game in some cases, but they are getting paid almost as much is him. The latest one is Dustin Wolf.
I was about to say, if you want to trigger Willie, mention the name Dustin Wolf.
Well, Dustin Wolf is a talented goalie who was a low draft pick, who is a very unique player in the mold of UC Saros. He's undersized. He's under 6 feet, but he is very gifted technically, very gifted athletically. He overcomes the lack of size. That should sound very familiar to you because that's how UC Saros is getting there. Dustin Wolf is going to be guaranteed $7.75 million. No, I'm sorry, $7.5 million, just under UC Saros. Dustin Wolf has played 63 games in his career. He has started half of 1 year. He had 53 starts last year. He's never played in a playoff game. He's guaranteed that money, whether he gets better or not. There's all this, UC Saros hasn't won in the playoffs, blah, 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 blah. These guys haven't even played in a playoff game. We're talking about Dustin Wolf. We're talking about Jeremy Swayman, who has played very little in the playoffs. He's never won a playoff series. He gets paid more than UC Saros. Guaranteed. He had a bad year last year in the first year of that deal. Lucas Dostal, another very talented goalie who has played on a bad team in the Ducks. They have hitched their wagon to him. They might reap the rewards of it. But he's never played in a playoff game. So all of the stuff that's used against Saros and the price tag, his price tag at 7.74, he is not overpaid. Now, if you want to argue that in his 30s he's going to decline, nobody knows that, right? Any more than they know that Dustin Wolf is going to continue to get better, or Dostal, as the team gets better, he'll get better. There's a lot of unknowns in a long-term contract. But I do know this. Anybody that tells you that UC Saros' contract is way overpaid, that is just flat-out factually wrong.
615-737-1025. If you have thoughts on UC Saros, we'll take those. We'll continue the conversation. We'll also wrap up the program by talking about Brady Martin, because we do have a text about the Predators' choices with Brady Martin. And Brady Martin will be a big storyline during training camp. We'll do that next. Willie Donig and Adam Vingan. This is Preds Insiders 102.5 The Game. Preds Insiders 102.5 The Game. Adam Vingan and Willie Donig here with you. We will bring you Preds Insiders live as often as we can throughout the season. And my plan is for Willie Donig to join me as much as possible, whether he's here or he's on the road with the team. Our plan is for it to be the two of us, but I plan on bringing some of your favorites into the mix as well. Robbie Stanley, Max Herz, Hal Gill, Chris Mason. We're going to switch it up. But Willie's my number one guy, just so you know that. You're my number one guy.
I'll be your number three. Let's have a three-man crew. Let's have a four-man. I like the difference of opinion.
Okay.
Well, I want to debate with Robbie and Joe on their turf in their morning show or on this show. Anywhere, I want to continue to have the
gauntlet
debate.
The gauntlet has been thrown down, Robbie and Joe, if you're listening. But let's talk Brady Martin before
we
go. Yes,
that's a big one. There's a lot riding on Brady Martin in the long term.
So we did get a text earlier about what are the Predators' options with Brady Martin. And the Predators have two options for Brady Martin, the number 5 overall pick in the 2025 NHL draft. If he makes the Predators out of training camp, they can start the clock on his entry-level contract and begin his NHL career. If not, they can send him back to junior hockey. If he makes the team out of camp, they have the option of playing him in up to 9 games before deciding to either keep him here or send him back to the Ontario Hockey League. Here's the caveat. If he goes back to junior hockey, he cannot come back to the NHL until his junior season is over. So if the Predators put Brady Martin on their opening night roster, they play him 8 games, they decide, we gave him a taste, we don't think he's quite ready yet, we're going to send him back to junior. His entry-level contract slides, so a year doesn't get taken off. He goes back to junior, but he has to stay there until the completion of his junior season. So they can't, in December, say, hey, Brady Martin, come on back. They can't do that. It's illegal for now. So those are their two options with Brady Martin, basically.
And Brady Martin is 18 years old. He played in the rookie tournament where, as I understand it, and it's a fact, right? You look at the ages of the players. The rookie tournament, quote unquote, can contain 18-year-olds like Martin. It could also contain 25-year-olds who are playing for the AHL on a team like Florida, for example. Florida doesn't have the greatest pipeline. Same thing with Tampa Bay, because they've traded so many picks, right? So they don't have as many prospects right now. So they have older guys to fill out that rookie roster. And that's by design. And they are wildly successful teams, right, in the last 5-6 years, two of the best. But they, so that's a consequence. So Brady Martin, all that to say, he's still so young. I think they would love, because he's so dominant at the junior level, if he goes back to junior, if and when, he's likely to dominate. It's not as, maybe not as productive for a whole year to just blow everybody away again at the junior level. You're playing against your peers. So what a lot of teams have done over the course of time is you play him a game here or there. You keep him around. You have him learn from guys like Ryan O'Reilly. You spot him, hopefully, in games, maybe at home where you can control the matchups a little bit more. You give him a taste of it, and then you send him back. Hopefully in the middle of this, too, Adam, which you didn't mention, the World Junior Championships. I'm hoping he would be a part of Canada's roster, which is not an easy team to make, by the way. They're always stacked with a lot. They could have two teams in that tournament, right? So the intriguing thing, though, Adam, you tell me what you think. The Predators are so thin at center. The flexibility exists on the roster to keep him in the lineup some.
Yes.
He has to earn it, but the space is there.
They do not have great center depth. Even Barry Trotz acknowledged that during the offseason. You could argue that the Predators have the worst 1-4 center depth in the NHL, if we assume it's Ryan O'Reilly, Fedor Svechkov, Erik Haula, and Michael McCarron. So there is a place for Brady Martin in the lineup. But we did this research at the time, Willie. Number 5 overall picks rarely stick with their teams the year that they're drafted. It does not happen very often. So what I would guess happens is that Brady Martin makes the team, gets a few games, gets his feet wet, goes back to junior. We'll talk to you next season. And I think it's important that they don't put him in a position where he will, for lack of a better term, drown. You
right.
want him to succeed. You do not want him to put you do not want to put him in a tough situation.
I totally agree. And I watched Scott Hartnell as an 18-year-old survive through on a team that was an expansion team, 82 games. That was tough. And he made it through. But David Poile often said if he could do it over again, he thinks it might have been better to spend that time back at junior or do what maybe they could do here, play the 8 or 9 games and then send him back. Even Philip Forsberg, who it's different for European players, right? Because you're not beholden to the Canadian junior situation. Forsberg, at 19, played a few games. Barry Trotz was the coach at the time. He was a little bit up and down. He had his moments. They sent him in to play the World Juniors, and then they sent him to Milwaukee the rest of the year. He got hurt some, if I remember correctly. And then all of a sudden, he took off the following year under Peter Laviolette, and the light went on. So all that to say, the odds of Brady Martin being a huge impact player at 18 are pretty low historically, but they really like his makeup and his future. The question is, what's the best thing for him right now?
Willie, a successful season premiere of Preds Insiders, if I do say so myself. We will be back next week. It's hockey season. If you want to catch the Predators practice during training camp, head on out to Ford Ice Center Bellevue. You can check the Predators website for a schedule of the group times because there are so many players right now, they break them up into groups. But we will talk to you next week on Preds Insiders. Willie and I will also talk to you tomorrow at 3 p.m. on DVD. Have a wonderful evening. For Willie Donick, I'm Adam Bingham. This is Preds Insiders 102.5 The Game.